Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ sanghaṃ namassāmi. Buddhist path then is a Noble Eightfold Path, and yet there's actually two of these, two Noble Eightfold Paths, not just one. There's a mundane path, so called, and a supramundane path. So I thought I'd just explain what these two are in as simple way as I can. So the first path, the mundane path, then is what you would associate with pretty much any of the major world religions. It's a common path to all these religions, the one of doing good and refrain from doing evil and benefiting as a result. Both in this life and lives to come. So one way you can see that Buddhism is no different from these other religions that emphasize virtue and the benefits of a virtuous life. In my eyes, then, Buddhism can be more skillful than some of these other religions in that this moral side is not moralistic, you know, judgmental in any way. It's just ultimate good and evil so much as what is skillful and unskillful, in that a skillful action will lead to a good result, a good action will lead to a good result, an evil action will lead to a bad result. So this is our reason, this can be our reason for acting in a skillful way, is wanting this skillful result. So this actually, to me, is an important difference. Buddhism doesn't preach self-sacrifice. It preaches a self-interest, but wise, skillful self-interest. One lives a skillful life, and then this skillful life will benefit both ourselves and other people. We're not out to suffer in order to help others. We're out to be happy helping others. So if we're suffering through helping others, then maybe we're taking this the wrong way, or we're grasping on to the idea of the what is right and wrong, or we're grasping hold to a result. We get frustrated if our efforts don't get the results we want. But in Buddhism, then, these efforts really, if they're well intentioned, they will lead to a good result in the mind. If we don't, then expect the results to be what we want. They can't always be what we want. So this is the mundane path, which is the path of all the worlds, not just this world, but the heavenly realms also. Then what's this supramundane path, which is unique to Buddhism as far as I know. And this path is to do with the realization that all the fruits of the mundane path are impermanent. So there is no ultimate freedom from suffering, that there is temporary happiness. Seeking happiness and working for it, and then you get the result. But this result is always impermanent. What arises ceases according to conditions. So it's not mean to say this isn't a useful thing to do. It is a useful thing to do, a valuable thing to do. It can help to fuel the path as a whole. But if we don't realize the limitations of the mundane path, of the acts of goodwill, and then we can feel disappointed by these when their results no longer sustain themselves. So if we can see this, then we'll want to try and find a way further, a way to peace, freedom, and to a natural state of happiness rather than one that we're continually having to cultivate. So this is what the supramundane path can offer us, is a completely natural state of happiness, and one that's completely to do with letting go of the things of the world. A few talks about this already, this aspect of letting go, which is not quite what it seems, is not getting rid of or losing something. It's a letting go of greed, hatred and delusion, letting go of desire, discovering freedom from desire. So this is often the path that's associated with the monastic life or with the monastic influence on Buddhism as a whole, particularly the forest tradition. The life of the forest monk tends to be one that emphasizes this quality of letting go, which is what you do when all else fails, really. I mean, eventually then we all have to let go of all the things that we've gathered to us in this world. The forest monk then will just do this as part of life. The whole life is about letting go of material, both material concerns, also material priorities. So living an extremely simple life. And then these places, these monasteries, can become a refuge then for lay people to also, when they come up against things, times of their lives or situations where there's just no way of cultivating something positive, all you can really do is let go, then that's where you go, to let go. So when there are things that come up in life, isn't there, where there's nothing we can do about them, somebody dies, say, a relative dies, it's often a very common reason for somebody going to stay at a forest monastery, is to overcome their grief. Is there nothing they can do? A person has passed away. They're looking for somewhere and situation and people that can teach them, allow them to let go and move on. This is what a forest monastery is all about. If you visit one of these, say, the Thai forest tradition, say, could become part of your life, then there's a possibility of this little monastery or this little monk or nun becoming something inside of you, rather than becoming a place you go to or somebody you go to talk to. Then you can have a little inner monk or nun who, when all else fails, there's nothing more you can do to improve a situation or get over something, whatever, then there's a place and a person and a tradition and an environment which is designed to help you let go and begin again. So one way you can consider the role of a monk or the role of the forest part of the tradition. This is a letting go, returning back to nature kind of thing. So I'll offer that one for your reflection.